Machinery to Manual. Rowan likes to work with machinery in the management of a steel plant and is responsible for the maintenance of installations. The magnificent view of the steel plant attracts Rowan like a magnet. It's like magic, Rowan would say, with magnetic charm. Rowan drives a big truck with a manual gear shift and also maintains the truck to keep it in good order. However, Rowan has some complaints and asks, "Why should people be called mankind? They are not all male." And all manners of questions like that. These questions are probably because Rowan is a woman, but regards herself as a neutral person in a manner of speaking. She managed to change the manual used in their plant in such a manner that words like foreman were replaced by foreperson. She even hired a male maid to do her housework. Rowan grew up on an island where life was different from that of the mainland. In the face of harsh nature, it doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman. That's the magic rule, Rowan said.
Manufacture to mature. Elliot was a food manufacturer who was married and had a marvelous wife. He served as a Marine when he was young and had a group of mates. Elliot's company manufactured marine products. Manufacturing was an industry with massive profit margins, and so Elliot and his wife were quite rich. However, they didn't have a child and tried to mask their disappointment in front of their friends. Sometimes they had to put on a mask of happiness when they were with each other. In the end, they decided to adopt a child from China. Elliot was interested in Marxist philosophy and was called a Marxist by his friends, as he always wanted to visit China. They saw this little girl sitting on a mat doing mathematical problems and liked her instantly. The little girl looked mature for her age and wanted to become a mathematician when she matured. Elliot started to learn Chinese and even mated their dog to a dog from China.
Maximum to Memorial. The mayor and his wife had a bet about the height of the memorial. As the top of the building was narrow and pointy, the measurement of it was very difficult. A special mechanism was used, but the result wasn't satisfactory. So the media was informed that anyone who could work out the exact height would be granted a medal, membership of the city club, and a large sum of money. However, this medium treated it as a joke and said that if any fool wanted to try his luck, well, go ahead by all means, and they would, of course, report it in the meantime. A mechanic took up the challenge. He was a man of medium intelligence but maximum courage, and he was not going to use any mechanical means, but by means of his own steps. When the time came, everyone stayed home watching TV. Meantime, they turned up the volume to maximum. It was by no means an easy job. The snow was melting, which made the surface even more slippery. But he made it. Now people have something to talk about when they attend memorial services.
Merchant to Millimeter. Peter was in charge of a ship. He was not really a merchant. Neither was he in the military, although he did have a military approach to running his ship, and his manner was not often mild. Peter was really just a mere pirate who carried a microscope with him because he had a patch over one eye and could hardly see out of the other. He liked to think of his crew as a band of merry men who robbed from the rich to give to the poor, even if they did keep most of it themselves. The crew knew they couldn't mess with Peter without some penalty, which usually involved having to use a microscope to sing to the rest of the crew. Consequently, they all felt at the mercy of Peter, especially at mealtimes in the mess, when he would show no mercy if he felt somebody had messed up his plans. For really serious messing around, such as messing the table, or even worse, not being able to spell metric measurements, such as millimeter, he would threaten to beat them to within a millimeter of their life. So, at mealtimes, these rough, tough men would try to sit quietly, hoping that Peter would deal out his rough justice to somebody else, particularly if it meant being locked up in the mill, back on land to mill the flour for their biscuits.
Minimum to mission. A missile was missing. The media talked excitedly about the miracle, and at the same time criticized harshly that the public services failed to achieve their mission. In a poll, the Ministry of Security was graded F-, which mirrored that the public's confidence had dropped to the minimum. They were given 3 days to recover. Although the temperature was minus 15, most policemen were out searching every corner of the city, leaving the minority to attend to their normal duties. Of course, the number was not enough to keep the minimum crime rate acceptable. And in fact, minor crimes rose sharply. This in turn made life even more miserable and misled people into thinking that they were really incompetent. Time passed quickly, 72 hours minus what they had spent, and it was almost the deadline. Finally, a teacher rang and said that her students, a group of minors, had stolen the weapon to give her a surprise in the science class. The teacher, who minored in acting, tidied her hair in front of the mirror before she took the interview. She beamed with victory on the screen.
Mist to mold. It was close to midnight when they met in the mist of a cool winter night, surrounded by trees of moderate height that provided some cover. He told her he had brought a mixture of hot coffee and spirits to warm them up, and a modest amount of food in case they became hungry. She looked at him with moist eyes and said, "Mister, you have misunderstood my messages and will have to modify your intentions, or else I'll become mobile in a matter of minutes." He was surprised at this outburst and wondered what she meant. Was there mold on his stale bread? Was it the spirits in the drink? So he said, "I see you are in a complaining mood tonight, and that it is not tears, but the night air that has covered your face with moisture. But I still don't know what you want me to moderate." She replied by taking out her mobile, and being what she thought was like a moderate, said in a trembling voice, "I thought we'd agree you were going to give up coffee. If you don't pour it out now, I'll mold your face with this phone and your glasses will mist up to the tears of your pain." Just then it started to rain, so they stood under his umbrella and talked about the weather instead.
Molecule to mount. When Ruth and her group of tourists mounted the top of the monument, she was very tired. Moreover, she was in a very bad mood, so she motioned to them to have a look around by themselves. She thought she might almost wish something terrible could happen, so she didn't have to take them to the snow mountain in the afternoon. She didn't really have any evil motive, and her morals were unquestionable. It was just that she wasn't able to sleep the night before. That's why she fell asleep, due to the motion of the bus. There had been a mosquito in her room that made noise constantly. Consequently, she had stayed up during the night, trying to find it. She sprayed every corner of the house, hoping to kill it. The smell was strong enough to kill any living molecule. It was only her moral strength that prevented her from burning the whole place down. She wished that her boyfriend could be with her, but he was in another city, and they only saw each other monthly. So for much of the night, she had tried reading every monthly she could find, and now tried to motivate herself to stay awake by thinking of him.
Movie to myth. A famous film director was once asked to visit a film school to give his advice on how to make a movie. He told the class that the best way to win multiple awards was to make a film containing plenty of mystery. But, he said, it was a myth that any musician could easily develop mysterious-sounding music for such a film, and that the best place to do this was often in a museum. He stressed that it was also important to look like a successful director by carrying a mug of coffee and wearing sunglasses. For the action scenes, he thought it was to everyone's mutual advantage to avoid mud when filming a mugging scene, and that a director could multiply the chances of winning an award if there were no actors who tried to mushroom their way onto the set, and then stand there like mushrooms, hoping to get some small part. Finally, he confessed his secret, that it was muscle and action that made a popular movie, and that the chances of winning an Oscar would increase by a significant multiple if there was also a beautiful woman in the film.
Naked to Negro. Teddy served in the Navy and worked as a navigator on a plane. Once, their crew was on a mission to collect some negatives from a nearby naval base. However, Teddy's navigation got them lost because he neglected some very important data. The fuel was used up, so the pilot told Teddy to get ready to abandon the plane, namely that they were going to strip themselves naked and jump into the ocean. Noticing that he hesitated, the pilot, a big Negro, joked to Teddy, "Come on, boy, don't tell me you can't swim." When Teddy gave him the negative answer, he couldn't believe his ears. "But how did you negotiate the exams then? Swimming is a necessity." "I'm going to charge your teacher with neglect," the pilot said, and ordered Teddy to jump. Teddy knew he had to, of necessity, obey. So, he didn't negotiate, but closed his eyes, crossed himself, and jumped. His wish, naturally, was to land somewhere nearby land.
Neighborhood to North. My niece and nephew are keen about birds. They like the time when birds from the north arrive in their neighborhood and feel sad when the birds fly north at the end of the winter. But in recent years, the number of birds has been decreasing. It was said that nitrogen in the air made them sick, so that some had picked other places to avoid this nightmare. Some say that's nonsense, because the climate has changed, and birds now prefer the north part of the state. However, I've also seen people set up a network in their neighborhood of the woods to catch birds. Fortunately, more and more people have paid attention to this problem. Trees that birds nest in are protected, and some permanent nests are built for birds. Nevertheless, some people say that the noises of birds wake them up and get on their nerves. Normally, most people hold a neutral stand. I've got strong nerves, so I'm quite happy that a group of 19 birds decided to settle down in my garden and share noodles with me sometimes.
Northeast to Nylon. Those novels about so-called nuclear wars are real nuisances. They just repeat themselves, and novel notions are nowhere to be found in them. But they appear in numerous copies each year. These books inevitably begin with sentences like, "somewhere in the northeast corner of the continent." But what does northeast have to do with it? Or maybe the author turned northeast hoping to be inspired. Although these books keep talking about nucleus and technical nouns like that, their stories really get nowhere. The imagination of these authors is nowhere near that of babies in the nursery. There are noticeable mistakes in them, too. I keep a record of the mistakes in a notebook with a nylon cover, and I'm going to notify the publishers and the authors.
Objection to occurrence. Sky observation is an interesting activity. There can be no objection to that. It's obvious that observing sky is as harmless as anything can be. Sky observers don't cause any problems for the environment or set up things that might become obstacles to their neighbors. Their objective is simple, to catch a glimpse of the occasional exciting occurrences in the sky. As this is done mostly at nighttime, they won't occupy their working hours with this hobby, so it doesn't interfere with their occupation. Of course, there are occasions when they stay up too late and thus arrive late for work, or on occasions fall asleep while at work. This might occasion some trouble with their bosses. But from an objective point of view, who else doesn't run into troubles like that occasionally? When they take out their telescopes and watch the sky peacefully, it's our obligation not to disturb them. If they want us to share the pleasure they obtain from discovery, why not just oblige them?
Odd to opportunity. Wilson wanted to go to the city because he was told that there were more opportunities to make money there. He packed his odds and ends and moved there, working at odd jobs here and there. He even applied for a job as a telephone operator, but arrived at the interview only to find that his opponents were all female. Anyway, he thought something must have been omitted from the ad, since it didn't say that they wanted a woman for the job, which he found very offensive. There was an opening for a life attendant at a theater. Wilson applied for and got the job. On the opening night of a new production, Wilson was very excited, thinking he could watch operas for free. He stole out of the list to watch the play, and he really enjoyed it. He cried when the hero was at odds with his sweetheart and broke off with her, and cheered when the lovers reunited against all the odds. And he had onions for dinner, so he was burping loudly. People were offended by his bad breath and kept eyeing him, but Wilson wasn't aware of his offense. When the manager found that the only operational lift was not working, he exploded. He caught Wilson in the audience and ordered him to disappear right away. Wilson figured the odds were that the manager wouldn't change his mind, so he said, "Please let me stay until the show is over. The fat lady has sung." A couple of months later, he was still on the offensive against the manager, who wouldn't let him stay until the finish.
Opposed to original. When the members of the orchestra met, it was usually an orderly affair. And today, they were optimistic as they gathered around the organ in the hall to consider a note about forming a new organization for their trips abroad. However, some members from a particular country wanted to use the spelling of organization, so there was confusion about whether they would be able to agree, or whether it mattered anyway. The conductor said he would oppose any option that was decided by only an oral vote, and suggested that the best way to organize, or even organize, a decision would be to cast optional secret votes. The first violinist, who was used to taking a leadership role in the group, and who seemed to know the origin of most words, tried to be diplomatic, saying that the original of the spelling was unknown. The chairman of the meeting, who liked to be original, but who was later thought to have an optical problem, said that because nobody was within a reasonable orbit of where he stood, or orbited round him closely enough, the meeting was therefore abandoned. In truth, he only meant to postpone it because he really wanted to go home to his organic garden, which he'd carefully located near an ore mine.
Ounce to oven. From the outset, I was against the idea. After all, who would have thought that such an outstanding outcome might be possible? And even if it could be possible, why wouldn't anyone with an ounce of intelligence want to try it? Anyway, this is how I almost came to be in the Guinness Book of Records. It all started when we decided to develop a square watermelon so it would be easier to transport. At the outset, we drew an outline of the size and shape we wanted, and selected fast-growing seed known to output unusual shapes. The seeds were planted in an oval pattern around the edge of a former football oval, well known for its fertile soil. Many plants grew, and we selected a few young fruit to enclose within a square frame, taking care to also ensure there was an outlet through which we could inject our secret formula for square growth. It worked so well that to all outward appearances, we had been successful. We then contacted the Guinness people to outline our success, and were invited to visit London with an example of our watermelon output. So with an optimistic outlook, we boarded the plane for London. However, our watermelon collapsed because it was stored next to the oven in the kitchen of the plane. All we had left was the outer part, 6 squares. When we tried to put them back together, they would always fall outward. So the Guinness people wouldn't accept our claim that all of the pieces had come from just 1 watermelon.
Overall to oxygen. Overall, train travel can be fun, if you overlook some of the little problems on a crowded train. If your luggage can fit on the overhead rack securely, you don't need to listen for luggage moving overhead, and can settle down to look out the windows. However, if it is an overnight train, all you might see is your own reflection. So, unless you like looking at yourself continually, it is best to sleep in comfortable overalls, and feel happy that you haven't spent additional money on any overhead such as airport construction fees. But if owing to too many drinks of water, you can't let sleep overtake you because you are overcome with an urgent need to go to the toilet, your overall progress is likely made difficult by people sleeping everywhere. Some might have even taken temporary ownership of the toilet, or have blocked the doorway. This can be a greater problem when traveling overseas, if you can't speak the language. A look around the train carriage will tell you if there is likely to be enough oxygen in the air to make your sleep comfortable. However, if you plan to travel overnight and expect the train to be crowded, try to end up owing no more than you can afford to pay for a comfortable sleep. Unless, of course, you are a millionaire owner of an overseas business, in which case you might want to buy all of the seats in the carriage.
Page 2, paragraph. My friend sent me a long email about a trip she made, all in one paragraph. She took a package trip to an island with a hot climate, thinking she could have a decent holiday there, sitting under palms and enjoying the view. Unfortunately, it turned out to be a painful experience. Everything went at a very slow pace. For instance, she had to wait for an hour for her turn at customs, then another half hour to package her luggage again. As soon as she stepped out, she was immediately surrounded by people who wanted to sell her all sorts of things, from a pad to a pair of pants, and a painter also insisted he draw a picture of her. However, the sight of police panicked them, so they palmed their money and ran away. When she went to the market, a friendly-looking girl palmed off some false antiques to her. The next morning, she was woken up by bands parading along the streets, so she went down to watch the parade. The streets were crowded with people who tried to keep pace with the bands. Supporters of one band weren't satisfied with the decision made by the panel and threw beer bottles at them, which set the pace for others to do likewise. Panic followed a big fight. My friend paced up and down her room when she found her money had been stolen and decided to take the next flight back. At least the plane seats are padded, she wrote.
Parallel to Patch. Unless you meet him, you can hardly imagine Kenny's passion for power and influence. There are few people whose energy can parallel his. He's always keen to participate in public gatherings, particularly political ones, and he's never a passive watcher. He makes pat remarks and parcels out his ideas to the audience, too. Kenny plays bridge, not that he enjoys doing so, but because he gets the chance to know famous people he partners at games. Although he has already made his fame in law, he regards it as only partial success. His aim is to make his way to the parliament before he's 30. He believes that no one is born ordinary, like a particle of dust, and everyone can be a gem if he gets enough pats on the back. However, in his leisure time, he likes to work in his patch of garden, or patch the fences. Occasionally, his friends will receive a parcel of vegetables, or a card with flowers pasted on it, which Kenny uses to patch up disputes he's had with them. It's strange that he shows parallel interests in both gardening and politics, which have no real parallel between them. His girlfriends said that he sometimes likes to blame others, say, if he forgets to take his passport when traveling, he'll blame her. But otherwise, he isn't a bad partner. Especially now she uses paste to stick his tickets and IDs to his bag. She likes to compare him to a dog, saying if you pat him, he'll return the pat.
Patience to perceive. Betty was in love. He had that peculiar, half-dreaming look on his face and showed no interest in even his favorite food, beef with black pepper. He only wanted me to walk with him at peak hour, when he peered at every car that passed by. I knew he was looking for the lass he met the other day. We were on our way home after doing some shopping, when we saw this pretty little pup leap out of car. Buddy rushed over to walk with her, and knocked down my shopping bag full of peaches. When I saw the fruit that I had paid £20 per kilo all roll down under the wheels of cars, I lost my patience. I had been pensioned from work for many years, and like my peers who also lived on pensions, I was past the peak of my life and had to be careful with my payments. I wanted to give Betty some penalty. After a while, Betty appeared, still looking back. He perceived that something was wrong and touched my hand with his paw. At dinner time, he still didn't eat, but pawed the pea soup in his plate. Still, the soup penetrated the rug and made a mess on the floor. I finally felt pity for him, so I stopped peppering my soup, turned off the TV, on which there was talk that the jobless rate was peaking this year, and took him out to look for his girl.
Percentage 2 Phenomena. Murphy holds a pessimistic perception of the world. Maybe it has something to do with his personality. His bad luck persists. Whenever he drives a car, he'll think that the petrol will run out. And it always does. To him, an umbrella is a permanent companion, and he won't do anything unless there's official permission for doing it. His performance at work is almost perfect. In fact, according to the records of the personnel department, he has never been late or absent. At one early phase of his career, Murphy left home at 4 a.m. to avoid the peak hour. In his backyard, he has a big tank full of petroleum in case there's an energy shortage one day. He's phased in a new life to avoid depending on the outside world, so he can survive when nuclear war breaks out. Murphy has also started to phase out things he can get from shops, and the percentage of necessities he can produce himself is increasing. Murphy is planning to phase deep sleep from his life, so he can keep an eye open at all times to detect any possible danger. Murphy is a phenomenon who needs a perspective to counter his bad luck. Whatever can go wrong, will do so, and it will always happen at the worst possible moment. Murphy's Law.
Time to plug. The Collins family took their twin sons out camping, and they found this perfect spot near a plantation. It was a forest of pine trees, with an open platform in the middle. While the Collins parents pitched in on arranging tents and everything, the twins pitched their baseball nearby. They got bored after a while and wanted to explore other places, but had to make a pledge that they wouldn't make any trouble before their parents agreed. They found a pit and crawled inside, and plotted to hide there and see what would happen. By the time the Collins had prepared plentiful food for dinner and sat down to have coffee out of plastic cups, it was almost dark. They started to worry about the boys, as the two of them had nothing but a pint of milk with them, so they plugged in the lights, thinking the light might give the boys some directions. Unaware of the boys' plot, they got very anxious as it was getting late. They pledged that they wouldn't make trouble, the father said. But something might happen. Creatures from other planets, or a UFO, you never know. The mother was pining to see her sons and started to call their names. The high pitch in her voice annoyed the father, who wished he could plug her mouth with a plug. Suddenly it started to rain, and the father put on a raincoat made of plastic and made his way along the pitted road to look for the boys.
Plunge to pollute. A group polled 10,000 college students about their views on politics, and the result of the poll indicated that most students thought politicians were polluting the place with their empty promises and lies. Some students even said that when these political animals carefully polished their speeches and delivered them as if reading poetry, they were poisoning the minds of their audience. The audiences, on the other hand, were said to be often unaware of this type of poison, plus the fact that the poisonous messages were wrapped in beautiful language, and were thus difficult to detect. Other comments were that such people might even plunge the country into depression by taking the plunge for personal gain, rather than continuing a plus growth rate in the economy. And it was said that their foreign policies are often likely to cause a plunge in the relationship with neighboring countries. In addition, it was commented that they would often use words in the plural form, like people or we, while actually the plural really only referred to them, not the majority. Therefore, many students concluded that being able to make good speeches was a plus in a political occupation. To them, this ability was only like polish to shoes, although they often became so skillful that they could polish off a speech quite easily.